Bring the Environment, Natural Resources, Finance Policy Committee to order. We're having a little bit of AV issues. First up is the zoo. Members, you do have the hard copy. I think we're going to continue to work unless I hear different. Did we give up on the electronic copy, or are we still working on that possibility? Okay, we're going to keep working, but welcome, Mr. Director Emke. If you could identify yourself for the record, and we'll ask you to maybe show us the cover sheet of your hard copy handout so we're on the right spot.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. I'm Lee Emke. I'm the director and president of the Minnesota Zoo. And the presentation this morning involved live animals that are working and a PowerPoint that apparently isn't. But I do have a hard copy of the PowerPoint presentation. It looks like this. It's in your package, and it would be very helpful, I think, if you could try to follow along until we get the PowerPoint up. The Minnesota Zoo is a state agency, and for those of you who are new, that may not be something you're familiar with. We're one of only two state-owned and operated zoos in the United States. We were established in 1978, so we're approaching middle age, but a lot of very successful things have happened at the zoo in recent years that I'd like to share with you. And it looks like we've got our... I'll start with our mission statement. I think for many people, zoos are still perceived of primarily as entertainment destinations, and there's no question that we do provide entertainment for families. But the primary mission for accredited zoos around the country and the world today is conservation. We've just gone through a strategic planning exercise and have revised our mission statement to very clearly state that. We're all about connecting people, animals, and the natural world.
Excuse me, Director Emke, two things. Take your conversations away from the table if you're going to talk. Representative Uglem, will you move the minutes of January 20th?
So moved.
Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The minutes are adopted. Director Emke, go ahead. Maybe we'll be a little quieter now. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, the mission of the zoo is to connect people, animals, and the natural world. You just saw an example of that with animals from our Zoomobile program, which travels throughout the state, going to schools and nursing homes and libraries, with living animals and naturalists to help do an outreach program for the zoo. But again, the outreach and the connections that we provide to guests and citizens, in the end, our goal is that we actually are helping save animals in nature. That is the primary purpose of zoos in the modern era. So again, zoos in general. I'm speaking in my role now as the president of the World Association of Zoos and Aquariums. It's an international organization that links zoos throughout the world. I've been honored to serve as president for the last year and a half. So I just want to talk briefly about what zoos in general are all about throughout the world. Obviously, we are places of learning and discovery. I think everyone can see that when you experience a zoo visit. As I mentioned, we are becoming increasingly important forces for conservation through captive breeding efforts, through actual work in the field with rare species and endangered places, and with the education and opportunities we have to meet a huge audience. I think you'll all be familiar with this. We are places for families. We're one of the very few venues that attracts and can hold the attention of the entire family group. Fewer and fewer opportunities for this exist, and I think one of the great things about the zoo is it is a place for families to come together and experience nature and experience being together. Zoos, in many cases, and especially the Minnesota Zoo, are economic engines. I'll get into that in more detail further on here. And I think this is a fact that many people are not necessarily familiar with. Zoos are extremely popular. The accredited zoos in the U.S. annually draw more visitors than all of the major league sporting events that happen in the U.S. combined. Zoos remain extremely popular for a broad audience, and that is one of our strengths, is the ability to reach out to many different people. The Minnesota Zoo has, on average, in the last several years, drawn about 1.2 million people a year. A U of M study indicated that just the operation of the zoo, not even counting construction projects that happen there, generate $146 million worth of direct and indirect benefits for the state of Minnesota. About 1,700 jobs are again, directly and indirectly supported by the operation of the zoo. And if you look at it, our $5.4 million annual operating budget from the state is actually returned. It's essentially a $26 return on every dollar that's been invested by the state. I think it's a pretty strong ROI. I'd also like to talk about the history of funding for the zoo. If you look, again, we were established in 1978, and back in the 1980s, 60% of our operating budget came from the annual state general fund appropriation. Today, that's down to 22%, and obviously the remainder is made up of earned revenue, contributed income, and other grants, including legacy funding, which we've been very grateful to receive over the last several years. But you can see there's really been a complete switch in the general funding model for our zoo, and it's something I want to talk about at the end of this presentation, that we believe there needs to be a bit of a recalibration of this, because on average, if you look at zoos around the country, know whatever their governing structures are, on average, about a third of their budgets are provided by public entities, whether it's state, city, county, or region. And we as a state agency at this point are now receiving significantly below that in terms of our general fund appropriation. We're a public-private partnership. We are a state agency, but we do work with the entire community of Minnesota, and we have great supporters in the corporate community, foundations, and the like. We have more than doubled the contributed income to the zoo over the last 5 years as a percentage. And as you can see from this slide, we have probably all of the major corporations and many smaller ones in town are partnering with the zoo because our audience and their needs are in sync. We're also a statewide zoo. We're located in Apple Valley. We're located, obviously, in the seven-county metro, but we serve the entire state. We are a state zoo, and we make a very specific effort to reach out and serve the entire state. Almost every county is represented here. We have members from just about every county. Our Zoomobile program that you saw today travels throughout the state, reaching schools and nursing homes and libraries in the far reaches of Minnesota. We also have a distance learning program, so we're beaming the zoo and some of our educators into classrooms around the state. And then school groups do visit on a yearly basis from just about every corner of the state as well. By the numbers, we are the largest environmental education center in the state of Minnesota. Over about almost 500,000 of our 1.2 million guests actually participate in some form of formal or informal education when they're at the zoo. We're very proud of this, and again, our primary role as a conservation organization is to provide education about wildlife and about wild places, and we've been doing that successfully for many years. We're also a direct conservation organization. All the animals that you see represented up here are species that we're doing work in nature to help preserve, either study to find out why some species are becoming threatened, or to directly be involved in conservation action to help save them. We're doing a lot of work in Minnesota, funded primarily through legacy funds with endangered prairie butterflies, with the moose, and with bison. A number of really great projects in cooperation with the DNR and other agencies and other organizations. And we also do work internationally with a number of very rare species, including black rhinos and tigers. I would add that all of our international conservation work is funded entirely through our Minnesota Zoo Foundation, which is our 501c3 support organization that raises money for those purposes. The zoo is a recognized leader in our field. We have been the recipient of many awards for our education programs, for our exhibit design, for our conservation work, and even for our marketing efforts. So throughout the country, we are perceived within the zoo and aquarium industry as one of the leading zoos. I think even internationally we have that reputation. And I think it's something I hope all Minnesotans are proud of, the fact that we have a world-class zoo that was a dream of the founders of the zoo back in the late 60s, early 70s, that's truly come to fruition. That said, we are in a situation this year where we are facing a fairly difficult financial situation focused primarily on our operating budget. Our fixed costs at the zoo have risen dramatically over the last several years, and they truly are fixed. We do not have the option to turn off the power to one wing of the building, or our staffing is all based on providing care for the animals and safety for our guests. We have had somewhat of a decline in attendance over the last 2 years, not huge, but enough to make a difference in the margin that provides us with a balanced budget. And we, along with everyone else in Minnesota, have felt the effects of difficult weather situations, including the polar vortex, very rainy spring and summers, and the like, which we believe has contributed to this slight downturn in attendance, which has impacted our revenue. We believe that with a relatively small increase in the investment by the state of Minnesota, the zoo can return to financial stability and strength. And we'll obviously get into more detail about that later, but it's a very important year for the zoo in terms of recalibrating our relationship with the state. Just a quick snapshot of where the money comes from. The $24 million budget for the zoo in 2015. As you can see, the purple section of the pie here is earned income. That is admissions, memberships, and all of the many small programs that we have at the zoo that actually raise money from our guests. That's nearly 60% of our budget. We do receive contributions through our foundation. About 9 to 10% of our budget comes from that source. As I mentioned, that's actually doubled in the last 5 years. But we also realize that it's a relatively small part of the overall pie. We do receive legacy funding and LCCMR funding for programs, which we are extremely grateful for. It's allowed us to expand our education and conservation efforts. And then there's the 22% that is the general fund support. Where does the money go once we receive it? Like most businesses of our sort, it's primarily staffing. About 67% of our budget goes to pay the salaries and fringe benefits of the staff at the zoo. Utilities are obviously a major issue for us. We have to keep life support systems going 24/7. And then a number of other items. But you can see the bulk of our budget is devoted to the salaries of our staff. And that's where we're seeing a bit of a disconnect. 22% of our revenue is coming from the general fund, but 67% of our expenses are essentially out of our control to an extent that they are its state workforce. And many of the increases that we've seen in the last few years have really dramatically impacted the cost of operating the zoo. So we've become increasingly reliant on attendance and earned revenue to support the operations of the zoo. So the footfall, the number of people coming into the zoo, is really critical because most of our revenue streams are tied directly to the number of individuals who actually visit us. You can see this graph. For the last 10 years, we've seen a general strong upward trend in attendance at the zoo. For a long time, we were plateaued at about slightly under a million a year. But with a number of major new exhibits and I think important marketing efforts, we have raised that. And if you smooth out the curve, it's been a very very good period of growth for the zoo. We reached our peak in FY12 when we opened a new penguin exhibit and Heart of the Zoo Phase 1 and reached almost 1.4 million as for attendance, which puts us that year in one of the top 15 zoos in the country. The last two fiscal years, we've seen slight declines in that number. But I would add that even with those declines, they remain within the top 10 years in the history of the zoo for attendance. So the point I'm trying to make is that although we've seen this decline, I think we're still doing very well in terms of attracting guests and providing service to the state. That said, we do need to understand better why we're seeing this decline, and clearly there's a number of variables involved. Weather is certainly one of them. The competition, what else is happening in the area, is something that we need to look at. The general economic conditions here in the country. And then what is it that we are offering? Our zoo, like most other institutions of our kind, need to refresh pretty much continually. We have a peak season in the summer, and we try to offer something special and new every year. And some years, that special offering does better than others. And what we've seen in the last 2 years is that we have not had quite the same impact as some of the better years just before that. This is maybe a tough graph to read, but it's an important one. This is the history of revenue generation at the zoo. The top line, the purple line, is our total revenue. And you can see that, again, it has grown very significantly over the last 10 years. But you've seen this bit of a decline in the last two. If you go to the next line down, that's the earned revenue component. You can see that remains the majority of the zoo's budget, and it's been the area where we have grown most significantly, and actually very strong growth in earned revenue. The blue line below that is the state general fund appropriation, and you can see that has dropped. Back in FY09, we were receiving about $7.2 million a year. That's now, through a series of cuts over the last decade, down to $5.4 million. And I'll get back to that. The year FY09, it was a third of our budget, and that seems to be the magic number for zoos around the country for public support. That is a comfortable place to be, and that's an area we hope we can recalibrate to during this session. The next line down is the contributed revenue. So you can see that's grown significantly. It's, as I said, it's doubled in the last decade. But overall, it's a relatively minor portion of the total budget. So when we're asked if we could simply fundraise our way to success, I say, well, we're trying and we're succeeding, but it would take an incredible sea change in contributions to make up the deficit issue that we're speaking about right now. And the final line down at the bottom of the graph is something, again, we're very pleased to be part of the legacy amendment funding through the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. And we received in the last biennium $1.75 million a year, which we are extremely grateful for and has allowed us to do some wonderful new programming, especially in the areas of conservation and education. But we cannot use that to support the core operations of the zoo, given the constitutional restrictions. And therefore, this is sort of on the side as great stuff that we are added value, but it's not helping us with the structural issue that we have with the basic funding and keeping our basic operations going. So I mentioned the notion of somewhat recalibrating our relationship with the state. And this year, we will be seeking a deficiency appropriation. The current fiscal year got off to a very poor start for us. We had a summer that did not meet projections, and therefore we're seeing a deficit situation. We took immediate action. We made cuts of $500,000, which included, unfortunately, some staff layoffs and reductions in maintenance and other things that we know cannot be sustained. But we're trying to do our best on our end to reduce expenses and also to encourage to kind of turn the attendance trend around, which I'm happy to say the second quarter has been very good. So our first quarter, which is the summer when we generally make hay, as we say, that's our busiest months of the year, did not meet our goals. We made adjustments, but we're seeing a second quarter that's a bit stronger. That said, being fiscally conservative and thinking about, we must end the year with a balanced budget, we are seeking $1.5 million this fiscal year to restore our budget, to balance the budget. Going forward, anticipating increased expenses and costs, both personnel and other costs, as well as wanting to restore some of the things that we've had to cut, we're looking for a larger year-over-year increase for our biennial budget of about $2.8 million. And all of this kind of gets back to that magic number I talked about, the one-third of the budget. If we can get to the point where the state, our owner, is providing essentially a third of our general operating budget, we know that we can do, we can succeed and continue to be the great resource that people expect here in Minnesota. So while these fiscal issues have been swirling around, it was actually a great time for the zoo board to enter into a strategic planning process for the last year. That strategic plan was completed and adopted by the board in October. And essentially, our vision is that we are going to be a leader in saving wildlife through inspiration, engagement, and action, the things that we do very well. And again, a strong focus on the conservation mission of the zoo going forward. And we said there's really three major things that we need to do in order to achieve this vision. And the first one is to develop a sustainable business model. We know right now it's kind of out of whack. We need to do more, not just on the state side. We need to find other ways to generate earned revenue at the zoo. We're already doing it. We built last year with private funding a conservation carousel. It generates $100,000 in additional revenue that didn't exist before, in a way that also enhances our conservation message. We're looking to add some other activities at the zoo this year that will generate revenue above and beyond admission to the zoo. And then, of course, there's the general issue of attracting more visitors to the zoo, because that's our primary source of revenue. So all of those things are built in. But a significant portion of this will be a rethinking or a recalibration of the level of state support for operations at the zoo. Secondly, and again, this gets to the message that when I speak to people in the community, they like the zoo, they know about the zoo, but they're not necessarily seeing us as a conservation entity. That's why we exist. That's why our board and our staff have firmly embraced the notion that zoos justify their existence by how effective they are in enhancing conservation of animals and wildlife in nature. And we want to position the zoo as a leader in that area and have everyone in the state of Minnesota and beyond recognize us as a conservation organization whose purpose is to save wildlife. And finally, obviously we are a place-driven institution, and we want people to come to the zoo, and we want them to have great experiences. We offer some pretty fantastic ones now, but we have a physical master plan with some fantastic future opportunities to take that experience up to another level, to enhance our conservation mission, and to deliver extraordinary guest experiences going forward, which obviously all ties back to the financial sustainability piece of having a strong and growing audience. So that's the quick overview of our institution, our goals, our mission, and our current financial situation, and I'd be happy to take any questions that you might have.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to kind of look at this deficiency request. So, Mr. Emke, you're asking for that for this fiscal year, so I'm assuming that you need it now rather than after June 30th. Could you explain what would happen if you don't get it until after June 30th, or just maybe some timing and urgency questions, and then a follow-up after that, Mr. Chair.
Director Emke.
Mr. Chair, Representative. At some point, we will have to make significant cuts to our staffing, which will probably at that point start to impact the services we can deliver to the public, including some of the exhibits. As I mentioned, we went through layoffs initially to respond to the poor first quarter. And while all of those positions were important, they probably don't affect directly the public experience at the zoo. The next stage will probably, that's where we're headed. Again, the majority of our costs are staff. We don't have the ability to cut down on, you know, animal food or energy or some of the other fixed costs. So the only place we really can go right now is staffing. And without staff, we can't operate exhibits. It's going to be, you know, we have not made decisions about which ones would close or which ones would be subject to reduction, but we're looking at those numbers and crunching it hard now. That would probably, you know, at this point our cash flow is okay, but by spring we're going to start to see a challenge ahead. So I guess one of the other, you know, really challenging parts of this is that cost cutting through staff reduction is not something that, you know, the first year is not an efficient year. There's a lot of payouts and other things that happen. So we would have to cut extremely deeply in order to get the $1.5 million deficit that we are currently projecting.
Follow up, Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, maybe this is a question for you on the deficiency bill. I mean, what's the process or procedure that's going to happen? I see that Representative Knobloch had dropped in a bill yesterday that included disaster and deficiency. And if there's a deficiency bill, is that the one? Does that come to each respective committee? Would we consider that and move it on? Or what's the what's the process here on the deficiency bill? Or is there going to be a deficiency bill?
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Members, I anticipate a deficiency bill that would include two items in the second bill that Chairman Knobloch put in, include both the zoo's $1.5 million and, if I'm not mistaken, $63,000 or $68,000 in general fund money for the conservation officers, $300,000 plus of game and fish money for the conservation officers, and a natural resource fund maybe for the conservation officers, if I'm not mistaken, around $500,000 for conservation officer underfunding, and then $1.5 million for the zoo. We will need to hear that bill here when it comes, Representative Hansen. It has been given a bill number. I don't know which committee it was first referred to. It has some Health and Human Services funding in it that's bigger than ours, so I don't know if it was going there first, but I have let Representative Knobloch know I want to hear the bill when it is introduced, and I think it got a bill number yesterday, maybe. Representative Hansen, follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Emke, I sympathize with the shortfall, and I, you know, looking at the graph, we have the big exhibits start, and there's a boost in attendance, and then it comes down. But weather's going to continue to be erratic, and and you know, I was out to the zoo with my family for the carousel opening, which I think was there was also the big bugs exhibit. So I know that you've been trying to do things to boost that, but they didn't work in the weather situation, and maybe changing tastes in the entertainment market. So, Mr. Chair, I've talked to you about perhaps with this appropriation having just a line about a report or something where you provide a plan that future legislators can look back on in terms of a benchmark, in terms of how to kind of get out of this cycle that we're in. And if we provide the $1.5 million, which I support, and I think we would support, that there's some forward look or some type of reporting that we can use to, if you're coming back again in 2 years or 4 years or six. So I'd like, you know, to hear your thoughts on that and maybe yours as well, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Representative Hansen, and if I'm not mistaken, we've let the zoo know that we would like to see that report and those discussions. And if I remember Director Emke, when we met out at the zoo, I think I kind of reiterated or mentioned those same kind of concerns that I'd like to see a plan for going forward. And I realize a big part of that plan is to get back to one-third state funding, which is the norm across the nation. Bless you. And so I respect that and understand that. So thank you, Representative Hansen, for bringing that up. Director Emke, I think, and we can have a little bit of the discussion more, and I think it'll be more important when we have the bill before us. What did you see? So 2 years ago, when the wage free got lifted, but yet you were held flat in your funding, did you not have some anticipation that there would be a problem? And then did you a year ago, when I think you had an inkling for how these contracts were going to come out, did you have a supplemental request? And if you have time to just give us a little bit of insight on that now, and then it could be prepared to fully answer it when we have the bill before us.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Certainly, we were aware of the contract terms and the fact that that would impact our budget. We did not seek a supplemental appropriation at that point. We tried to budget for those increases. Some of the assumptions about attendance and revenue were, in hindsight, incorrect, and that's primarily what's caused the problem. We recognized the costs were coming. We did make cuts. As we went into this fiscal year, we cut about $400,000 worth of expenses going into the fiscal year, knowing that this additional burden was going to be there. But again, with the summer performance of the zoo not being as strong as we had budgeted, we've had to go back and make additional cuts. So we have, I think, both prospectively and after the fact, have reacted to what were anticipated increases. It's just they all did kind of come together in about a two-year period. The combined increase was about $1.7 million in additional cost with no additional staffing at the zoo. And we are, you know, one of our current challenges is that we have extremely low turnover. We had budgeted for about a 3% level of staff turnover. We're not seeing that as well. So those are additional expenses that are adding to the problem. I know that you know, in some cases, some agencies are able to respond to the rising costs by holding positions vacant. We believe that every position that's held at the zoo right now is critical. We can't, so we are at a point where, again, cuts would require changing what we can offer the public, which means closing exhibits.
Well, thank you, Director. And when you do come back, I would like to see you lay out for us specifically how you, I'm trying to imagine, when I put this budget in perspective, your $25 million operation and your $1.5 million in the hole. I know in your operations between now and June 30th, and I know how labor contracts work with state employees, and there's really minimal dollar savings when they immediately get laid off because contracts guarantee them separation benefits and such. When you come back, I do want to see your proposal, if you're not given any money, what the implications will be for the zoo, and how I'm trying to imagine how you can possibly save $1.5 million. And I know you have some reserves, if I'm not mistaken, they're nowhere near enough and accessible. Some of them have restrictions on them, they can't be used for operations and such. So I want you to bring that information back and be prepared so the people on this committee know how serious this is. And then also, I'm having a tough time, and again, if you're not prepared now, to understand how you didn't see some of this coming a year ago, because it looks like attendance in 13 was flat, down 5% from the year before, but you had to really anticipate significant increases in 14 to think you were going to make ends meet, so I'm trying to understand that. So I don't know if you want to save that for later, that's fine. I'd like to have a thorough discussion with that at that point. And then, Director, I did ask when we met out at the zoo, I want to understand what additional costs and things have happened. You have six young moose calves. They're probably not so small now that you were literally throwing in your lap when they were abandoned by their mothers in northern Minnesota in the study that we funded, and you took them under your wing, and that's a pretty cool deal. And I understand you're not going to be able to let them go back out in the wild. That doesn't work, unfortunately. And so I would like to know what other things like that you've had to do. As you noted, your number one mission is conservation and things like that. So if you can also be prepared for some of that when you come back. Director Emke.
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to respond to several of your requests. I think the big picture of going forward and looking at the financial model for the zoo has been addressed as part of the strategic plan that was adopted. We have a pro forma for the next 5 years that is what we see as the optimal path. That said, we do need to look at the other options, including, you know, no additional funding from the state, and give you and the committee a very good understanding of what the implications would be. We'll be prepared to do all of that at the next hearing.
Thank you, Director. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Emke, I was looking at your chart on page 5, and I got a couple of questions, if that's all right. So what can you tell me what the purchased services are for $1.6 million?
Director Emke.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green. A majority of that, actually, or a large portion of it, is the IT services that are provided by MnIT. It's our former IT staff, but with the consolidation of all IT personnel in the state into the MnIT, that now technically gets called a purchased service. So that's a major portion of that. Others are consultants and architects for new planning, and the like. I can give you a breakdown of that, but I think the biggest piece of that is what was formerly within the zoo's core budget for our IT staff that's sure. now represented because of the change in reporting as a purchase service.
Follow-up, Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the utilities portion, you had 7% of your budget, $1.7 million in utilities, and I know that there's no way to get around that, but my question on that is, have you seen significant increases in the utility bills in the last few years? And how much? Do you have any idea how much that would be right offhand?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I believe last year it was a 7% increase over the previous year. I don't know what that is in the dollar amount, but clearly the winter, last year's polar vortex had a significant impact on our heating bills. So that is that's an area where we have seen pretty much consistent and significant growth over time.
Representative Green, follow up.
So then, I'll just throw in there, you can maybe answer what the next question is. Assuming then that we don't have another severe winter like that, you could have some savings there. But the other thing is, you're asking for $1.5 million, but you've stated that you're down like $1.7 million. And so if you are to receive these funds, then will the money go to rehire the folks that have been laid off, or just sustain what you have? And then you also stated that the savings isn't realized immediately. So into the future, are you still going to be realizing more savings from those layoffs?
Director Amstey.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green. The two numbers are not quite apples to apples. The $1.7 million is the total increase in compensation over the period of 2.5 years when the contract negotiations occurred. We have made many adjustments within that, including the layoffs. So our $1.5 million request is not directly tied to that 2.5 year growth in compensation costs. To your other question about future savings, that would be the case. Clearly, once all the payouts, et cetera, from a layoff have been managed, there will be additional available resources for the zoo. Our concern, however, is what has to happen in order to make those kinds of cuts in terms of what we're offering to the public. Very concerned that if we start actually closing exhibits, we will see a continued decrease in attendance because there'll be less for people to see, moving into kind of a spiral situation that we certainly want to avoid.
Thank you, Director. And folks, we do have four more folks that have questions. I would like to wrap this up by about 9:05, as we have both LCCMR and Lassard Sams before us, realizing that Director Emke and his numbers folks will be back when we have the bill before us in regards to the deficiency, and also will be back when we have the budget of the zoo before us for the ongoing budget. Representative Torkelson.
Pass.
Well, I would probably, if you have questions that you think
covered most of my answers.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Torkelson. But if folks have questions that they want the director to be prepared with the answers when he comes back, if they're long, feel free. And Representative Green, you had really good questions. I don't mean that as to not ask those kind of questions. I just want to, and we have plenty of time for the folks to have the questions. So if you have questions that we can come back with more information, I'm a believer that the more questions and the more we understand the zoo, we realize what a fantastic asset it is for our state. And we're blessed that the director came here in 2003 and has done a great job. And it was the city of New York's loss and our gain. So, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Emke, just a couple of real quick questions. You talked a little bit about the zoo and how it sits nationally and so forth. I'm curious to know on your admission fees, when you come back, if you could bring some information for us on how you charge for admission and how much, and what kind of increases you've made over the years to cover those expenses. And then the other question I have...
Representative Fabian, let's actually ask them to answer those right now, if you don't mind, Director Emke. I think they would be good for folks to know. Excuse me, Representative Fabian.
The chair.
Director Emke.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, our current general admission pricing is, we believe, at about the ceiling that can be borne given the product that we offer in the marketplace. It's $18 for an adult and $12 for a child. That said, actually the majority of our guests are not actually paying those rates because they're coming in as members. A membership to the zoo provides unlimited admission for individuals and families, and more than 50% of our visitation currently are members. We also offer free or reduced admission to a number of groups to try to encourage those for whom the general admission price would not be affordable. But we do believe that the current level, with the current offerings at the zoo, we are at a ceiling. We have raised the pricing over the years as we've added major new exhibits and experiences. And I would also add that's partly been in response to the reductions in state support over time. So there has been a move from primarily subsidized zoo experience to one that guests are now paying a larger portion of the overall cost. So we're concerned that that's something right now we would not advise doing another admission fee increase given the recent history of attendance. And so we believe that is kind of at a ceiling right now.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Fabian. Chair. Mr. Emke, you said about 50% of your visits are from memberships. What's the structure of the memberships? Individuals, families, help me out there. And what's the cost of those?
Mr. Chair, Representative
Director
Fabian. We have a wide, kind of a broad menu of options for membership that range from a single individual to a family to a grandparent package, all of which are at slightly different cost levels. I think the most frequently purchased is the family value membership, which is $130 a year, which we average if it's a family of two adults and two children, that if they actually visit the zoo two times during the year, they will have essentially that pays for the membership, and then visits beyond that are bonus.
Director Emke, how much does a grandparent, says member 6 / children 4, I only have two children, how much does that membership cost? I should know, I'm looking at mine, but I can't remember.
Mr. Chair, I'm afraid I can't remember myself, but I think it's in that $130 range.
You've got to call a friend that's going to answer that for us.
It's
she can come up, if you don't mind identifying yourself the record, and you can tell us what I paid for it.
Chairman, representatives, my name is Beth Burns. I'm the Vice President for the External Relations Division. You paid $130 for that membership. And gives you unlimited visitation with your grandchildren.
And I would need to come about twice with all four grandchildren to make it be a value?
With four grandchildren, it's a value at 1.5 visits.
Oh, so I need to bring all four once and only two the second time.
Exactly.
Well, it's a very good value. Thank you. Representative Fabian, follow
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Emke, do you track how often Grandpa McNamara comes with his grandchildren? Do you have that information?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, we are just now implementing a new point-of-sale system that will allow us to do that with great accuracy. We do it informally now, and we have a general sense, and we know that Representative Chair McNamara has more than received value for his current membership, we're very pleased about. But we are looking quite seriously at understanding our customers' behaviors better than we currently do, which will allow us, we believe, to increase revenue and find other ways to serve people where they're at their entry points.
Additional follow-up?
Just one real quick thing. Your fundraising, you talked a little bit about that. I'm interested in seeing your fundraising plan laid out, the documents that show us what your plan is, how successful you've been, what your goals were, and what were the outcomes. Thank you.
Director Emke, if you could bring the information about the foundation board, the zoo foundations board, when you come back and that would be great for us to hear and see. Representative Dill.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and Director. My 13th year, and I'm trying to recall, and if you could tell us how many times that we've had to cover a deficiency like you're proposing in the current biennium, and I don't mean that critically, I'm just like, is that a pattern that we have, and for thinking about my legislative district that I have the pleasure to represent, your experience with visitation was not much different than what happened along the Canadian border where the lakes were still frozen 2 weeks after fishing season began, so it doesn't surprise me in the least that you experienced that. One of the things you talk about is increasing the share of state support general fund to a third rather than, I believe it's at 22%. My question is, trying to compare apples and apples, and I don't expect you to be able to answer this today. I recall in my 13 years that we've had numerous instances where the state has bonded and borrowed money to increase the exhibit, to improve and to add new exhibits. So if you're using that 22% of state level of support against other states, does that include, do they include the bonding dollars into that third or the money that comes from other pots in the state? Are you, what does that look like? And then lastly is if we increase the state funding from general fund now, not from bonding or other sources, does that increase our return on investment? Because thinking about, you had a 26-to-1 ratio that you claim, I'm not so sure that I buy into government having a return on investment, but I'll give you that you are open to the public and that, you know, there's some idea there. But does that actually increase our return on investment to the taxpayers of the state by going to one-third versus at 22% or what? I gave you a whole bunch of questions. I don't expect you to be able to answer them, but if you could in the future.
Director Emke.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill, I'll try to remember the sequence of the questions. I believe the first one was about past deficiency requests. Mm-hmm. The last one, I believe, that the zoo came forward with was in 1998 or 99. It was before I came to the zoo, and we've not. This is the first one since then. When I arrived at the zoo from New York, as Chair McNamara mentioned, one of the first things I looked at, I said, we never want to be in this situation again. And we have consistently, for 15 years, been able to avoid coming back for general fund appropriation during fiscal year. Unfortunately, this year, the combination of things has required us to do that, which is unfortunate. The second question was about bonding and how other zoos around the country, whether that's factored into the numbers that I've given, and the answer is no. The average 33% that I mentioned is for operating support only. The funding models for zoos around the country are very different, but in general, a third of the operating budget of zoos is supported through public funding of one source or another. Many zoos do also have the opportunity to receive public funding for capital improvements, but that is not included within that one-third number. And I'm sorry, your final question was?
Representative Deal.
I'm having the equal trouble remembering exactly, so I'll give you a new question.
Representative Deal, you're covered because I see the two phone-a-friends behind wrote down every one of your questions as you were asking them. So Director Emke comes back, I think it'll get answered. Follow-up, Representative Deal.
Yeah, last question. If short of putting in general fund, which is in high demand for all kinds of things, education, healthcare, to say the least. If we're trying to raise this seems to me that your business is a top-line business, that the more income you could generate from visitation, the better you're going to be, regardless of the amount that we put in from the state general fund. So would we be better to bond for new exhibits or to find money for new exhibits, I think, through bonding, but someone else may have a better idea, to drive the top line of the business, because it is a business, rather than increasing general fund, which is in competition with many other things?
Director Emke.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill, that's a great question, and I would say that the level of success that the zoo did see over the last 7 years, again, increasing our baseline attendance from 950,000 to nearly 1.3 million, was the direct result of capital investment in new exhibits and facilities at the zoo. That was, of course, accompanied during that period by decreases in general fund appropriations, and for much of that period, I thought that was a good balance, that the investment in capital offset some of the decreases in operating support. However, I do believe we've now reached a point where that equilibrium doesn't work, and we are seeing that in the sensitivity that we have to, you know, relatively modest changes in attendance have a huge impact on our overall budget because of the proportion that we rely on as earned revenue. So I guess my answer would be I would hope that the state would continue to invest, as well as the Zoo Foundation and our private fundraising efforts, in new facilities and new offerings for our guests. but that the general fund appropriation, getting it back to that one-third level, is absolutely vital for the future of the zoo.
Follow-up, Representative Dill.
Well, I understand. The last question, I don't know the answer to this. Local governments have the opportunity to not pay workmen's compensation premiums and pay the actual cost of workmen's unemployment. I'm sorry. They have the opportunity to not pay unemployment premiums and pay the actual claim when there is unemployment in a local unit of government. When you lay someone off, does that get charged back to you, the unemployment charges, or is that absorbed somewhere else in the state through? I don't know the answer to that. Here, I've been here 13 years, and I don't know the answer to that.
Director Emke.
Mr. Chair, Representative Till, our employees are state employees, so all the rules that apply through the contract negotiations with those employees are in force, so we do pay for those costs.
Thank you.
If I'm not mistaken, Representative Dill, it's actual costs in state government, similar to local government, unlike the private sector. And if we find out different than that, we'll have that information at the next meeting. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You may have said it and I didn't hear it, but I am assuming that that the economy of the average middle-class family affects somewhat your attendance figures. I mean, we're hearing in the last few weeks wages aren't going up for anyone, and at a certain point a family would probably start cutting back on whatever is discretionary funding, and I'm assuming that that has an effect cumulatively on the zoo. Just to clarify the request, when I see the slide, so in this biennium you would add 1.5 million to the base. That 2.825, is that over and above the 1.5 that's added, or does that go back to the current number, the current budget number?
Director Emke and Representative Hausman, to put in the context, to give you a little cover, Director Emke, that's your proposal. We have not seen the governor's. We have not seen the governor's proposal, and I just want to save you from getting in a little trouble prior to seeing the governor's proposal. Director Emke.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, that number, the 1.5, would restore our current budget to the original level, and the 2.85 would be additional, and that is based on the fact that we do need to restore some of the things that we have cut, things like our maintenance budget and marketing and other things are problematic.
Oh, hi.
Please identify yourself for the records and add to the answer.
Phone a friend. My name is Mary Robinson. I'm the chief financial officer for the zoo. The 2.8 increase was relative to our current base of 5.4 a year. So it would include within that addressing that structural deficit that is 1.5 in this year.
Representative Hausman, follow up.
Not to that, but just going to it, my least favorite slide of this presentation that raises my blood pressure, and that's the one that says annual zoo and aquarium attendance is greater than all major league sports events combined, and they give some indication of that. And then the headline of yesterday's paper, I think, that the University of Minnesota is going gangbusters, and they're going to invest another $150 million on 4 practice facilities and various other things. And we know the numbers. I mean, right now, the University of Minnesota, I think, has to try to figure out how do we convince students to go to football games. I mean, so I just think about Como, where, and there, because there isn't an attendance, I don't think our numbers have depressed. We are at 2 million. And we have a WPA-era home for the seals, and including, I think we still have the one that floated out of the Duluth Zoo in the flood. You know, where we see people go for entertainment, millions of people in this state, 2 million to Como, 1.25 to the zoo, and it's so easy, it seems, to find $150 million for a few more athletic facilities at the university. But where millions of people are going, it's like an uphill battle. So that's my zoo rant for the morning.
Thank you, Representative Hausman, for that perspective. It's a very important one. Director Emke, thank you for coming. I want to remind members in your packet is the Legislators Day at the Zoo. It's an opportunity for any of you that may not have been there. It's a week from Saturday, January 31st. to go out there for a couple hours and see the zoo. And if I remember, Director Emke, members are encouraged to bring family members with them to experience the zoo, and then you'll do a little presentation to better understand your operations. Thank you for coming. We look forward to seeing you. Hopefully it'll be soon, maybe as soon as next week or the week after, to discuss your most important short-term needs. Thank you. And next we're going to hear, you know what, I need to, the pages. I believe we now have the fourth or fifth set of pages, but we have our permanent pages. If you could come, as Director Emke leaves, if you could just come to the podium or to the speaker's chair and identify yourself, where you came from, what you aspire to do. We'd love to hear. Just if you could identify yourself, that'd be great. Welcome.
Thank you, Chairman. My name is Anna Johnson, and I originally hail from Chicago, but I've been living in Minnesota the past couple years, and I'm not sure what I want to do, but I'm really excited to be here.
Cool. Welcome.
Thank you, Chairman. My name is Austin Blanche. I'm from Prior Lake, Minnesota. Just graduated in May from the University of Minnesota. And I also am not sure what I want to be, but I'm very happy to be here.
Well, we're glad you're both happy to be here. And why don't you just have to be here by 7:30 to plug the coffee pot in. So thank you very much. And all the other duties you have. Next, we'd like to hear LCCMR Director Thornton. We figure we have about 20 minutes for your presentation. Are we backwards? Director, are you here? You know, I don't see her. Director Johnson, are you ready to roll? Let's go with Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council, and we'll do LCCMR last. Welcome, Director Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'll get we have a technical.
You might need to pull the mic up a little bit. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do we have a technical person? We'll pull the PowerPoint up.
I'm hoping one of your three staff people behind or one of the pages can handle that, because I know I can't. Go ahead and start, Director, if you would, and he'll get her going.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. In your packet, we have a packet in front of you of the PowerPoints. I'll breeze through those. First of all, I'd like to mention that I do have the staff of Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council with me. They are behind me, I think, actually. Yes, all of them are here. Amanda Brzee is here. She's our commission assistant. Sandy Smith. Amanda's in the far back. Sandy Smith.
You know what?
I'm sorry.
Director, excuse me. Ladies, if when he introduces who you are, do you mind? Some of the folks in the audience can't quite see you. Would you just come far enough so as he introduces you, we'll be able to recognize a face and know if we come in to chat with you that we're with the right person. Go ahead and introduce him again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, Amanda Brzee is here. She's our commission assistant. We also have Sandy Smith, our project analyst and manager, and also Heather Koop, our assistant director for the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. I think it's important that you see their faces and get to meet them because we want to be a resource for you. So, my name is Mark Johnson. I'm the executive director of the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. There we go. In your packet, the slides, just as a little background, again, a history for the backdrop of this overview, the Minnesota Constitution was amended with the Clean Water, Land, and Legacy Act back in November of 2008, voted on by the people of Minnesota. The amendment can be found in Article 11, Section 15 of the Constitution. That amendment called for the establishment of four dedicated funds, one of which is the Outdoor Heritage Fund, and it was funded through the addition of through an additional 3/8% sales tax, you can see the distribution there. 33% or 1/3 of that 3/8% proceeds of sales tax goes to the Outdoor Heritage Fund, and that comes to approximately $100 million each year at this point. The amendment requires that the Outdoor Heritage Funds be used to restore, and enhance wetlands, prairies, forests, and habitat for fish, game, and wildlife. The Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council itself was formed under the Minnesota Statute 97A.056. It's part of the legislature, of the legislative branch, and I'll get into the makeup of that in a moment here. But basically, they make funding recommendations to the legislature for use of the Outdoor Heritage Funds, and then the legislature makes the appropriations as you see fit. Under 97A.056, as I mentioned a little bit ago, it does give directive on how those funds are to be used. Basically, at least it directs that at least 99% of the money appropriated to the Outdoor Heritage Fund be expended for projects and programs, again, consistent with protecting, enhancing, and restoring and enhancing our wetlands, prairies, forests, and habitat for game, fish, and wildlife. Another thing that it directed the council to do was to form a small grants program, which is the Conservation Legacy Grants Program, and that is administered by DNR. That's part of the appropriation recommendation each year from the council. And that small grants portion is no grants over $400,000. Primarily, those are much smaller grants. In fact, the bulk of them are expedited grants, which are under $25,000. Or 25,000 and under. The makeup of the council, this is our roster of council members at this point, but it have current members. There are 12 members total. Four of those are legislators, and eight are citizens. The public members serve for 4 years. The appointed legislative members serve at the pleasure of the appointing authority. And as you can see, we have a couple of those members who serve on this committee as well. Currently, the council is awaiting the appointment of four public members and the appointment or reappointment of four legislative members. So the guidelines, guiding principles of the Outdoor Heritage Fund from the beginnings were basically established through a collaborative effort between the council, legislators, and the stakeholders. They're listed here. In a nutshell, they come down to being accountability-oriented, conservation-oriented, and science-based. And I won't read the verbatim on all of these slides. I hope that's okay, being you have them in front of you. From an accountability-wise standpoint, the council strives to recommend projects that are basically the cream of the crop that come in. Projects that are focused, that leverage manpower as well as funding from other sources, so make the dollars go the furthest we can, and projects that are results-oriented, as well as projects that have program potential. And in other words, they have a larger scope that can be followed up on. In other words, the council strives to take a big-picture approach with a statewide vision in mind. Statewide vision and priorities of the council and of the fund, basically from a conservation standpoint, conservation is the goal, and meaning that we want to see projects, or the council wants to see projects that have program potential, as I mentioned, that consider larger issues of landscape level implications. For instance, rather than restoring a 40-acre parcel of native prairie, how about taking a larger view of restoring that parcel, but also restoring the adjacent wetlands, the oak savanna, removing the invasive species, and providing connectivity to adjacent habitats of public as well as private land? That's the idea of going with a larger view. In other words, large endeavors that are well thought out, well designed, have long-term impact and long-term benefit to the resources and to the people of Minnesota. From a science-based standpoint, the vision and priorities look, as you see on the slide, they're in tune with state plans such as the Minnesota Conservation Plan and the Prairie Plan. They're cognizant of the Minnesota County Biological Survey data, as well as considering wildlife species of greatest concern, rare, endangered, threatened, habitats, as well as species. In essence, it's this emphasis upon science helps focus on the big picture while being sensitive to the local on-the-ground characteristics. This chart provides an overview, just a glimpse of the distribution of the types of recipients over the last 6 years of appropriations. Notice the number of local and regional governmental recipients grew dramatically in 2014. Those entities include the counties, local government units, etc. And the list at the bottom is only a very small representation of the recipients to date through these years. The recipients of the CPL, Conservation Partners Legacy Grants Program, are again represented on the right side of this slide. And again, that's just the tip of the iceberg of the recipients, but it gives you an idea at least. Again, the CPL Grants Program comprises of grants no more than $400,000, and the bulk of those are $25,000 or less. It also, and those go to conservation organizations, goes to local units of government, sporting clubs, whoever comes in and puts in good proposals, and the DNR goes through those proposals, vets them, and manages them. It also requires a 10% match by the partner in time, in kind, in money, whatever it might be. At least a 10% match for those conservation projects.
Director Johnson, we have a question. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to this slide and the one before it, do you have a rough approximation of how much of this money is used for land acquisition, you know, public lands, things of that nature?
Yes. Director Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Representative, yes. In fact, one of the following slides will give us a little more directive on that. If that's okay, we defer.
Sure, thank you.
Representative Hornstein.
That'd be okay. Great.
Thank you. Proceed.
Mr. Chair, thank you. A very good question, though. This slide that we have up right now basically shows the ecological sections of Minnesota within the state that the council uses to define the project locations and to create categories for those project locations to fall into. I believe we're a couple more slides until we get to that, Representative Hornstein. Here's just a snapshot of from one of those ecological areas, the Northern Forest section, a snapshot of a few of those projects that have gone through. The photo on the right is actually a photo of a 13-acre parcel on Burnside Lake up in St. Louis County. Outdoor heritage funds were used by the Minnesota Land Trust through a project to purchase a conservation easement on this 13 acres plus 9 other properties. Very pristine lands, unique habitat, again, permanently protected, still privately owned and on the tax rolls. The Northern Forest section outcomes are listed here for your the basic outcomes are listed here for your perusal. Projects and programs basically each deliver outputs such as acreages, acres restored, miles of shoreline protected, or increased number of trout per mile of restored stream. But the goal is, with the council, is to define the benefits on a larger scale and looking at the outcomes, not the outputs. Outputs are very important, but outcomes are basically, they depict that larger benefit that you see on this list. The programs funded in the forest prairie transition section, again, here's just an example listing. The photo to the right, again, is of is an example. It's the Gilfil and WMA near Madison Lake in Blue Earth County. It was a DU and DNR collaborative acquisition and restoration of this wetland. I think at this time the picture was taken, it was actually a drawdown to allow the vegetation to come back, get rid of the invasive carp that were in it, and so on. Very nice project. The forest prairie transition section outcomes, again, every section has its list of outcomes and directives that we're focusing upon, projects we're focusing upon. Here's just a list of them again for you. You'll probably notice that habitat improvement and water are keeping water on the land involved in pretty much every list. The conservation metro urbanized section is again a very distinct section within the council's vision and or council's focus. The conservation easement program, Dakota County is just one of, these are a short list of examples of that again. Dakota County, Anoka County, the Three Rivers Park District in the Western Metro, and of course the Metro Big Rivers Habitat Project are all excellent examples of that. The Big Rivers, of course, working on the Minnesota, the Mississippi, and the St. Croix Rivers, and multiple partners involved in each of those. The outcomes, again, specific outcomes for the metro urban area. This photo is of the Cedar Creek Conservation Area. It's courtesy of the Anoka County Parks and Rec. Basically, it looks like a rye field, and it is, because that was part of the process of restoring this conservation area back to desired, more diverse ecotype, and this was taken back in 2012. In the southeast forest section, there are a number of things happening down there again, but here's just a tiny list of that, of those projects. The photos on the right are pretty much a before and after of some of the work that's been done on cold streams down there. This was in particular Hay Creek, which was a Trout Unlimited project. The top pictures, it's not the exact same spot or exact same perspective of the creek at that point, but it gives you the great idea. The top picture is what the creek was looking like before, choked, a very low flow rate, very high sediment load in the creek bottom itself, and in the bottom is after restoration, where you have a higher rate of flow, you have less choked, you have more trout habitat, you have a much more vibrant stream brought back. In fact, we were told that, I had the pleasure of going down and looking at this with the staff, and we were told that where you may have had 30 to maybe a maximum of 100 trout per mile before, now you're looking at 3,000 to on up to maybe 10 times that many per mile. Just extreme vibrance brought back to the stream again. And again, southeast forest section outcomes are definitely, these are some of the outcomes. Again, parcelization and fragmentation are always a concern within the forest, healthy plant and animal communities. Down there you have also those rare and unfortunately dwindling goat prairies, so protection of those and so on. It's protecting forests from parcelization, fragmentation, I guess I already mentioned that. And of course the challenges of the cold water fisheries. The prairie section is another very unique section, and as you'll see when we get into the dollars, a lot of the dollars have been going into the prairie section, in fact the majority of them. This picture to the right just depicts one of those projects. It's a landfill prairie in Clay County. It was the first land purchased in Clay County. It actually was a native prairie that had not been tilled, previously owned by the Landfield family and used as pasture. Another great example of native prairie that, which is a very quickly dwindling supply in Minnesota. In fact, I think about 1% of the native prairie, 1.5% remains in Minnesota at this point. Prairie section outcomes, again, very much native prairie oriented for restoration and protection, wetland restoration, protection, grassland restoration, keeping the water on the land, and providing those healthier habitats and healthier ecosystems within the prairie section for animals as well as plant communities. Now we start getting into the dollar figures a little for you. This slide is the council recommendations to date, just gives you a basic overview. There is, going from 2009 through 2014, you'll notice 2010 there's quite a drop there. I'll bring up why that is. It was an appropriation forward, which took about a chunk of the 2010 dollars, and those were for the Blandon conservation easement. Many of you may remember that, or at least hearing it reading it in the press. That Blandon easement, I think, was for 186,000 acres in total. Yeah, huge. The next slide goes on acres affected by activity, and we'll get into dollars affected there coming up too. But again, the protected acres, or protection is done in two ways, either fee acquisition, or fee title acquisition, or easement. And as you can see, the acreages that are laid out there, the vast majority goes into easement rather than fee title. restored acres, enhanced acres. Restored and enhanced, actually, it's nice having them in the column here. I can't say that those are exactly correct, because what one person may call an enhancement, another may call a restoration. And so I would venture to say we probably have much more restoration acres than are listed as that muddles back and forth. We'll try to clear that up in the future a bit. This next one is acres affected by section or by ecosection. So whether it's the metro or the prairie, the forest prairie section, southeast or the prairie or the north northern forest. And again, in 2009, it says not available or NA. Those figures, we have those figures, it's just they're not readily available to us because that's been, everything was done on paper and it wasn't in the computer. It wasn't done on the online, current online system. The 186,000 acres of land and basically would come in under the northern forests in the 2009 appropriation, I believe. The next, am I getting behind myself? There we go, I'm right. Funding recommendations. Here you can see this is, again, by eco section on how the funding breaks out. And as long as you have this in front of you, it gives you a chance to dig through those at your own timing. You can see that, again, the prairie is picking up the bulk of the dollars to date and pretty much on a consistent basis, 2-to-1 pretty much from any other thing or more. And again, that's because of the priorities of the council, the priorities of the legislature, the DNR, to try to work on those native prairies, especially in those rare habitats that we have there. Representative Ornstein, I'm sorry, I don't have the slide on the dollars for acquisition versus everything else. I can get that for you and for the committee.
Question, Representative Ornstein.
Mr. Chair, that'd be helpful.
Okay.
Curious about that.
Director Johnson, continue.
The this following slide is to give you an idea where you can go, or you can come to myself and the staff for information, and we will gladly provide that or dig it up for you. If you or your staff wish to just jump right into a couple of different websites, or if your constituents want to know where they can go for information, this is the Lasard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council website. You can see the URL at the top. If you notice, just there are some blue bullets on there. This first bullet is ML2015/FY2016. Immediately below that it says MAP, OHF Legacy On the Ground Completing Projects. I don't have a cursor that I can show you that with, but at any rate, if you click on that, it allows you to dig down, to drill down and find specific areas of the state, maybe your district, and see what projects are in your district that have been completed, not ones that are not completed or ones that are just being undertaken or are 99% done. Only those that are totally completed and their accomplishment plans have been approved. In this case, you see a lot of larger balloons. If we take the one up in the far northwest, I think it says it's 66, it says on that. That's up in Roseau County, or in Kitson County, up in Representative Fabian's area. 66 represents how many projects have been finalized within that balloon area. If you click on that balloon, it allows you to drive down deeper, and you can see where all of those projects are. And each of those balloons, you click on them, and it'll give you more information, right down to the accomplishment plan. Here's another website. This is the Minnesota Legacy website, where you can find the information, as well as information on all of the arts, cultural heritage, or the other dedicated funds, including the funding for the LCCMR. And that is my PowerPoint with the overview for you. We'll stand.
Thank you, Director Johnson. We appreciate you coming in and look forward to you coming back when we have your bill before us. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Director Johnson. Good presentation. I'm asking if when the data goes up on the website, if maybe the ML09 data could get put in there, because I think it's important for true transparency. If the public is looking up and wants to see how things have been spent, that we get all of the data up for the public to see.
Assistant Director Coop, will you answer his question? Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, I'm Heather Coop, and the Assistant Director for the Lasard Sands Otter Heritage Council. Representative Hansen, we had an earlier misstatement. The data for Minnesota law is 2009. At that time, the law did not require a breakdown by ecological section. That was adopted in 2010. So while we don't have the information up front, we will be able to capture that at the time of final report. So within, after the period of time in which at which time the appropriations close, we will be able to document where in which ecological sections the activity occurred.
Thank you. Follow-up, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that's good, particularly since that was the first year for the public to look at some of the trends and where things are going, if we can get that in. And I think you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Coop, you bring up a good point that some of these projects are going to take years to complete, and so the final report may be a long time after the actual appropriation.
Thank you. Thank you for coming in. We look forward to seeing you again shortly when the bill's before us. Director Thornton, if you could come forward for the LCCMR presentation.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Susan Thornton. I'm the director of the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources, LCCMR. And I was going off an old agenda, Mr. Chair, so I apologize. I was not in the room. I want to talk. There's two items in your packet this morning. And one is, and I'll be talking about various items within this, is our biennial report. This is the summary of our biennial report. And the other is a list of the, is a sheet with the constitutional language for the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund and the statutory expenditures allowed and exceptions. But first, Mr. Chair, I'd like to talk to you about who the LCCMR is and also what the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. The LCCMR is a 17-member organization that is in the legislature, advisory to the legislature from funding from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. The staff is a nonpartisan staff. We serve all 201 of you, and we are available for questions, comments, concerns, happy to go over past appropriations, future recommendations, and so forth. And with me today are the staff. We're over in room 65, so we're just available around the corner from you, and we really welcome when you stop in. Michael McDonough on the staff, Diana Griffith, and Mike Banker. And as I said, we are staffed to all of you, similar to Brad and Janelle, except we also are staffed to the 67 senators also. So, Mr. Chair and members, on this committee, the members serving in the last biennium were Representative Torkelson, Representative Purcell, and Representative Fabian. And then in past years, we've also Representative Dill and Representative Houseman and Representative McNamara have been members of the LCCMR.
And Representative Hackbarth.
And Representative Hackbarth. I'm sorry, you were in my blinders there. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the 17 members are five appointed by the House, five appointed by the Senate, and then seven non-legislative members. And of those seven non-legislative members, five are appointed by the governor, one by the House, and one by the Senate. And we work off of the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, which I sometimes refer to as the poor older sibling to the new constitutional amendment. The Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund was first adopted as a constitutional amendment in 1988. In 1990, 40% of the net lottery proceeds was adopted as another constitutional amendment to go into the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. In 1998, there was a third constitutional amendment further dedicating state lottery proceeds, those 40% of the net proceeds, to the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund through the year 2024. So how the trust fund works is an endowed fund in the Treasury. Proceeds from those 40% net lottery proceeds from the state lottery go into the trust fund. It's about $30 million a year. It is then invested by the State Board of Investment, 70% stocks, 30% bonds. And then what's available constitutionally to spend from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund is up to 5.5% of the market value of that fund as of June 30th of the even year before the next biennium begins. So it's June 30th. We always hope for a good market day on June 30th of the even-numbered year because it does make a difference. And so what's currently in that fund right now is approximately $843 million, I believe. As of this past June 30th, it was $842 million. And so what is available to spend in each year of the upcoming biennium is approximately $46 million. And that's markedly up from where it's been. Mr. Chair, I mentioned our biennial report. This was submitted. This is statutorily required. This was submitted to your committee as required on January 15th of this year. This is available electronically on the website if you wish. We also can provide you with hard copies of this, any members. And what's in this report are summaries of past appropriations, summaries of the fund, expenditures, and then also what's required is what's being recommended for future funding. So also in here are past requests for proposals and the current strategic plan from which the commission operates under. So, Mr. Chair, with that said, as I said, the one pager in front of you, this is the constitutional language as amended, adopted and amended twice. And then 116P.08, this has been in here since originally in 1988 when the trust fund was first established. The statutory guidelines for the types of expenditures that can and cannot be made from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. And that's always what the commission puts in front of them as guidance when we review proposals. So also in our summary report here of this, you can see the overview of the past processes. Dollars available. We have on the second page is a nice little, on top of page two, about the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. It kind of tells you how the money goes in and how the money goes out. A summary of our 2015 project recommendations, which will be before you hopefully in the upcoming weeks, and some summaries of projects funded or underway in the last 2 years. And also, Mr. Chair and members, on the back of this, you can see a list of members as of December 14th. And these are the members that were on the commission during the time frame of this biennial report, also staff names and contact information. So our process, Mr. Chair, is the commission issues a request for proposal. And through that request for proposal that's open to everyone, we have guiding priorities within that and criteria. The commission solicits proposals to come in. Those come in. We sort through them. As there's the open process, we as staff are available to any person interested or the thought on funding as in submitting a proposal in response. And we will work with people on drafts. We don't want this to be a process that's perceived as difficult. It's a simple two-page proposal. The key for people in proposing is they really need to know what they want to do, and we will help them articulate that. Often it's a matter of we'll sit down with people, they'll go over their idea, and we'll say to them right back, turn on the tape recorder. The way you explained it, don't let the format and so forth get in your way. So, members, we have a new request for proposal that was just issued this last December. Again, it's posted on the website, and these are for proposals that the proposals are due May 11th of this year. This was for funding for beginning in fiscal year 17. And so we are happy to meet with you on any past projects, accomplishments, or go over this, or please always feel free to have any of your constituents contact us if there is an interest in submitting a proposal. As I said, the commission goes through a process of reviewing proposals, a recommendation package. Those that are research in nature go through a peer review process before the appropriation is made. And then it comes before you in legislative bill form for your consideration and review. We hope we pull together a thorough package that's wide-ranging and is interesting to you and the legislature for adoption and then signing into passage by law by the governor. Once projects are signed into law, we have what we call work plans, which outline the scope of work that the commission has oversight on for the time frame of the appropriation. And most of these appropriations are being used from a range of 3 to 5 years. Particularly research projects or restoration projects, they, you know, our fiscal year begins and ends in the middle of the field season, and so more time is needed to really get either good restoration or statistically valid information. And just a couple, I just real briefly will mention some things that might be of interest to you, whether it's been some major investments. And the commission has a commitment to also investing in long-term foundational data. And as part of that, there's been the long-term investment in the County Geologic Atlas, which I think you have heard about and will be hearing about, the County Biologic Survey, updating the National Wetlands Inventory. Also, there's been a major investment in the Aquatic Invasive Species Center at the University of Minnesota. And then also you'll be seeing a new major investment before you in the upcoming bill for fiscal, for this upcoming fiscal year for a terrestrial invasive species center. So our hope is that working with them, we can better align and understand what research priorities are for our aquatic and terrestrial invasive species. And the commission has been funding those types of initiatives for many years, including on the common carp, garlic mustard, purple loosestrife are some of the past successes, or we hope to be soon new successes. Also, the emerald ash borer and research on that. Also, developing initiatives for experiential environmental education. You may have seen the big Voyager canoes on the Mississippi River with school kids. That's with Wilderness Inquiry, and that's been another major initiative to really help kids get out in the backyard. And we've done wildlife research, moose, a number of the series on moose research that you hear about in habitat, and the moose mortality has been funded through the LCCMR. Also, Mr. Johnson mentioned LaSalle Lake. That was a joint funding effort between the Outdoor Heritage Council and the LCCMR. And so the goal is that there's coordination, individual funds stay true to their funds, but that they not be operating in silos. So, Mr. Chair, very quickly, I went over a number of things.
Well, thank you, Director Thornton. Questions for the director? Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two, please, if I could. One is maybe not necessarily to her, but to you, to say, I don't know if in our over, in these briefings, whether this will be clear. There are four things where we fund sort of broad natural resources: the bonding bill, LCCMR, legacy, and then your bill, Environment and Natural Resources. And three of them have some constitutional designation, and the one she gave us here particularly says capital project for the preservation and protection of unique natural resources. So I'm assuming that's very clear, but and Representative Torkelson and I were talking specifically about the trails issue. When is it bonding? When is it legacy? When is it your bill? Do we have any, I'm looking at our staff here, have we put that on any sort of chart? When do they go to the bonding bill? When do they go to legacy? When do they go to your committee?
Well, thank you, Representative Hausman. Capital projects for preservation and protection of unique natural resources is part of the statutory language.
And I'm just thinking broadly, because we have four areas, is who gives direction about where the appropriate place where they when they start the process of seeking funding? And maybe it doesn't fit today's discussion, but I mean, since we had just Representative Torkelson and I had started, maybe you've already raised the question with him about when you seek funding from which source.
Well, thank you, Representative Hausman, and I would say trails specifically, they don't fit the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage part of the 3As. They do fit the Parks and Trails part. Again, the dedicated sales tax, we've got a couple different funds here. The dedicated sales tax, 3/8 of 1%, that's the new sales tax passed in 2008, has the components of Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage, the clean water component, and then those each are 1/3 of the basically three-legged stool. Then the third leg is a combination of parks and trails and arts and cultural. And that parks and trails component specifically fits trails very definitely, and I think a significant part of that goes in trails. Trails also fit in the bonding bill. Historically, they have been in there. That has ebb and flowed in how much it gets. And then in our operational budget or the budget for DNR, we'll include parks and trails funding. Generally speaking, I would say more on the maintenance side of it, but it does include that. So it kind of, I don't know how much, Ms. Thornton, have you done trail acquisition in LCCMR? I'm assuming you have over the years. Would that be correct, Ms. Thornton?
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Hausman, yes. And I do want to point out in the constitutional language, five lines down when it says, public purpose of protection, well, conservation, preservation, enhancement of the state's air, water, land, fish, wildlife, and other natural resources. That other natural resources is statutorily defined as the state outdoor recreation system and the Metropolitan Regional Park open space system. So, yes, we have funded trails throughout time, most recently Browns Creek Trail, the Mesabi Trail, immediately come to mind as two showcase trails.
And if I'm not mistaken, the Mesabi Trail will be in the bill that's going to come before us that Representative Torkelson, I think, is going to carry. If I'm not mistaken, it's in your proposed bill that'll come before us. I don't know if it's the only trail. It's one I remember in my mind seeing.
Mr. Chair, you are correct. You remember the Mesabi Trail is in the current package of recommendations.
Okay. Follow-up, Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess the my sense, and maybe I haven't been on this committee, and it feels a little happenstance and messy, and I just didn't know if does somebody get direction? When do you approach this funding source? When do you approach this funding source? given the fact that maybe each one has a slightly different constitutional direction, or and maybe it's there's not a clean answer to it today, but it just seems to me, do we figure it out on a case-by-case basis? Do we give direction to a local group that's seeking funding? You'd be better off here than here. So there may be not a clean answer, but it just seems there's a little bit of messiness.
I think it's a great observation, Representative Hausman. Just the overall perspective of these different funds and how they fit can be, if they're confusing to you and I, how are they the general right. public? You know, and wondering where do they go, and it is confusing to this point, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to this point, I just think it is complicated. We've managed to make it complicated over the years. I just think it's very important to remember that the Parks and Trails money from the constitutional amendment, the 3/8% sales tax, is kind of the icing on the cake. We always have to keep in mind the supplement and supplant language as part of that constitutional amendment. And although that in itself can be a little hard to interpret, it is important that we do keep that in mind and that we realize that money is kind of over and above and beyond what we'd otherwise be doing here at the legislature.
And well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Torkelson, Representative Hausman, it's great for the two of you who are the lead two people on capital investment to be reiterating what the people on this committee want to hear, that we're not going to be the only ones funding parks and trails. Representative Hausman.
Well, and Mr. Chair, it had always been clear to me, but I will tell you, any time that I talked about putting trails, which we did substantially last year, in the bonding bill, because I thought we built them. That's what was always clear to me. Well, we build them. We build infrastructure. But usually there was somebody who asked the question, well, doesn't this get done in this bill? And so, it's just a broader discussion maybe for this committee, and we can revisit sometime. The other one, Mr. Chair, if I could, is when a project is funded by LCCMR, is there, as in anything else, do you go back and see, is that being spent the way you thought it would be? And specifically the one I am wondering about, since it's new, is the first of its kind aquatic invasive species research center at the University of Minnesota to develop new tools to measure, control, and solve aquatic invasive species problems statewide. Do you go back and see, once you've granted that, how they're doing it?
Ms. Thornton, if you could real shortly let us know how accomplishment plans and how you show that we are spending the money appropriately. I know you're real tough on people to make sure they're doing what they're supposed to do, which is your job. Real quickly, I have one more question and we got to adjourn.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, yes, that is our job as staff. That's what we do. When we're not working with you all, is we have oversight. Reports are required twice a year. On each of these appropriations, if there's a change in the scope of what we call a work plan, Alder Heritage calls accomplishment plan, they have to come forward with an amendment, whether it's budgetary or, as I said, within the scope. With the AIS Center, they will continue to come before us. All of the research components have not yet been identified, so they're coming forward to us with those research prioritization components for funding within that appropriation. So we always have an ongoing report and rapport with those recipients.
Thank you, Ms. Thornton. Tomorrow we have Board of Soil and Water and Pollution Control. Representative Hansen passed, so we're done. Meeting adjourned.